You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. Today is April 10th, 2013. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA and a CFP and an AEP. You can learn more on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen each and every week at wdiy.org. That's wdiy.org, especially for our listeners outside of the transmission area, so you can have your friends and family listen online. We welcome you and we welcome your membership. The markets were up today, the Dow closing at 14,802, the NASDAQ at 3297, and the S&P closed at 1587. Happy to have you here. Last week, I had Sherry Free, a CPA and representative from the PICPA. Sherry's a CPA in Quakertown, and I sincerely appreciated her taking time out of this busy tax season to come in and talk to us about what to do with your tax return. So thank you, Sherry. Tonight, I have two attorneys in the studio with me this evening to discuss green divorce and other aspects of divorce, including dividing assets and child support issues. And before you think it might not be applicable to you, I'm just going to put it out there that this applies to quite a few of us, whether it's has relating to our parents, to ourselves, to our children, to our friends, neighbors. There could be a lot of important information that we're going to learn this evening around divorce. And if you're not divorced and hopefully not planning to get divorced, there still might be a thing or two you might want to pay attention to and think about. You never know when these things are going to happen. And you know, we're talking about being proactive at all times. So we are going to talk and start with them in just a few minutes. We are live. We welcome your questions. You can call in and talk live with us. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can always give your question to Neil. He's answering phones for us this evening, and he will bring in the question to us. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments or specific legal advice. And while we do typically have a topic each week, you can talk, call in and ask questions off topic, and we'll do the best we can to answer them. Again, the number to call, 610-758-8810. And tonight, green divorce and lots of other aspects around that as well, but that's the buzzword, green divorce. What is it and what are the important aspects of divorce planning and resolution? And with me this evening are attorneys Nancy Wallach and Abel Iacobelli. And welcome to the show, Nancy and Abel. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having us. It's a pleasure.
I really appreciate it. I had seen an article or something had triggered that we saw, I guess maybe it was in a publication, I'm not sure, but when Andrea, who was with us before, saw this, she said this would be a great topic for the radio show. So we reached out to you, and we thank you for coming on and being here. But Nancy, can you start by telling people a little bit about yourself, how you came into doing divorce law?
Well, I graduated from nursing school in 1968, and I was a nurse from 68 until 81. I was a critical care nurse specialist. I worked in the emergency room and intensive care. And I did see that medicine was changing. When I graduated from high school in 65, there were two choices. You either became a teacher or a nurse. You were never expected to work. I actually wanted to go to medical school, but there were seven kids. My father thought that would be a waste of money since I was never going to work.
Oh, wow.
But in any event, eventually, my passion has been writing, and I applied to Villanova Law School, and I was accepted. I graduated in 84. I intended to do a defense medical malpractice, and I was hired by a firm. My first day on the job, there were 75 divorce files piled on my desk. And I learned that that was because I was the only woman in the office, and divorce was a woman's work. When I went to the senior partner to ask if I could be relieved of some of those, because my intent was to do malpractice, he put his finger an inch from my nose and told me I had a bad attitude and that I'd never make it. So, being, as I said, one of seven kids, you know, you learn how to take care of yourself. So I decided I had to really do a good job. Well, that was 30 years ago, and I've been very successful in doing that, I hope, and I've really enjoyed it. I think that family law is the one area of the law that really does touch people. It helps people. You can have an impact on people. In my own practice, and we'll get to that when we talk about child custody, I have had several children who were the subject of child custody disputes, trials. They're getting a divorce now, and they've come to me because they remembered me.
Oh, wow.
And so, I mean, those are the kinds of rewards that you get when you help people. And I think both Abel and I have really, our philosophy has been, it's not just another case. It's not just a way to pay the rent. It's really, we feel it's a, you know, we feel, both of us feel a passion towards it and really dedicated to fighting for our clients.
It's like a calling.
Exactly.
And it's interesting that you started as a nurse, which is a caregiver, and you, one of seven, it's probably all about caregiving. You can't help but do that when you're from a big family as well. And the other thing, I'm from a big family as well, and one thing I do know we learn from big families is compassion, because if something can happen, it's going to happen to someone in a big family. Every aspect of something, someone's lives can happen in a big family. Abel, what about you? Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to meet Nancy.
Well, I always wanted to be a lawyer when I was growing up. And so after graduating the University of Delaware, I applied and was admitted to Villanova as well. And I remember vividly standing at what was then the DuPont Pavilion in line to graduate. And I turned to my friends and I said, there's two things I will never do, criminal law and family law. And I got a position at a firm in Norristown and doing what I thought was civil litigation. And next thing I know, I'm doing some criminal work. And I decided to leave that firm after about a year. And my cousin was Nancy's bookkeeper. Nancy had an opening, so I came up, and that was 15 years ago. So I'm doing family law for 15 years. About 3 years ago, however, I saw the issues that were being presented to us in our practice, and that there's a lot of tax issues. So I decided that it may be a good idea to go back to Villanova, and I just finished in December my master's in tax program.
Great.
And so I'm going to be expanding my practice not only to do family law, but also estate planning and some tax litigation, tax preparation.
Oh, wonderful. I love tax, so we can talk a lot about tax.
Well, divorce, many aspects of divorce are all about tax and the tax consequences and making sure that the clients understand when they enter into an agreement the impact of that.
And I think that's going to be an important issue that we're going to talk about, and especially important. I know that I have had clients who will try to work through things themselves sometimes, and they do not understand the impact of the separation of the assets. So I do want to talk about that as we go along here. Real quick, I want to answer a question that came through. It doesn't have to do with divorce, but I will give the phone number again in a minute. It's from Ted in Bath, and he had purchased a house for $30,000, spent $20,000 on repairs, for a total cost basis of $50,000. He sold it for $50,000. He said, would he pay capital gains on it? Ted, first of all, I don't know if it's a house that you purchased as your principal residence. If it's a principal residence that you purchased and you lived and owned it at least two of the last 5 years, if you did have a gain, it is excluded anyway, so it's a moot point. And typically when you're going to settlement, they ask you questions like, did you live in the house and own the house and all of that, and then they don't report that sale. If you bought the house for investment purposes and you invested $30,000, if you had repairs and you expense those repairs like on a rental property kind of avenue. Real estate purchases could take a number of different aspects. So because you're not on air, I can't ask you all of these different questions, but let's pretend you bought it as a rental property, fixed it up, expensed the repairs, then that is not adding to your cost basis. Then you sold it for $50,000. You might have a gain in that situation. If you owned the property longer than a year, it would be capital gain. If it's less than a year, it would be ordinary. But I don't have enough information to exactly answer all of this. You have to understand what kind of property it was, whether the repairs were actually repairs and expensed previously, or if they were capital improvements, meaning you built a new kitchen, you added on a garage. Those are capital improvements, add to the cost of the home. And in that case, if you spent 50 and sold it for 50, obviously there's no gain or loss, but you should still report it. Folks, we're going to a quick break. When we come back, we will take your calls. Phone number 610-758-8810. I have attorneys Nancy Wallach and Abel Iacobelli in the studio talking about green divorce. More fun information to come.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
That was quick.
And we are back. It goes quick breaks. Folks, if you have questions this evening, whether it's about tax or in particular if it's about green divorce or a divorce or prenups or custody, alimony, we have two attorneys in the studio with us this evening, Nancy Wallach and Abel Iacobelli from the firm Wallach and Iacobelli, and we are discussing green divorce. So tonight we're going to talk about what that means and what are some of the issues around divorce that people have to pay attention to. And maybe it's not even issues around divorce. Maybe it's issues around marriage. So we're going to talk about what we mean by that as we go through the show. If you have questions this evening, we welcome your calls live or off air, whatever you prefer. We are live. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Nancy was telling us before the break that she had come from a background in nursing, critical care, and had not really ever planned on doing family law, had planned on doing malpractice. And Abel had graduated from Villanova and had no intention of doing family law either. So I think it's very funny that they ended up coming together and doing family law. When you're drawn to something and called to something, you're just called to it. You can't resist it. So you guys were called to this. And I've thrown out the word green divorce a couple times already. Can you tell us what you mean by that? Because that might be a new term that people have not become accustomed to hearing yet.
The term green divorce is a brand of an idea that I've come up with to try to help people shift their idea and paradigm that a divorce has to be confrontational. You have to litigate. You have to fight. You have to win. You have to punish one person or the other person for all the transgressions during the course of the marriage. The term green is known, everyone knows the environment, but actually I was thinking more in terms of the green light has always been to go forward. Mm. I really believe that people need to really consider when they're considering separating, when they're considering a divorce and going through a divorce, even if they're halfway through the divorce. No one really wins at the end of the day. I've learned that in 30 years of litigation, and I've litigated many, many cases, and I am absolutely convinced that litigation is not the problem-solving avenue that, in fact, one in the 80s, it had to be, because in 1980, Pennsylvania rolled out a no-fault divorce, guidelines for equitable distribution, guidelines for alimony, guidelines for child support soon followed. The law was not made in the 80s and 90s, and some aspects of it in the early 2000s, but now, 30 years later, I mean, most of the case law has been decided. It is predictable. When I first started practicing, and this is this is absolutely the truth. You can go on the internet and find out yourself. Women who are married to men who worked at the steel did not get their pension because they were not entitled to it. It wasn't until the Supreme Court said, no, this is a marital asset. I don't want to go on about this, but the law has changed to the point where now many of the aspects that were in controversy, if you will, have now been decided. So if you go into a lawyer and you ask certain questions, except for things like, surrogate motherhood or, really bizarre artificial insemination cases, what do we do with the fetuses that are being frozen at the Lehigh Valley, hospital center? Everything pretty much has been decided. So in any event, the green is going forward, but it also means money. Green has always been identified as money, as you well know, and also financial wealth. And you save so much, not only energy, but you save money in trying to resolve your own case and fit your case into the facts of your life. And I'll just say this, and then I want to give Abel a chance to jump in here because I know that he feels the same way, and particularly with respect to the tax aspects. I tell my clients, going to court is like going into McDonald's and banging on the counter. I want a hamburger. I want a steak. What are you going to get? You're going to get a hamburger. You're not going to get a steak in McDonald's. And going to court and saying, I want justice. She did this. He did that. She did this. He did that. This is a no-fault state. Fault is not a factor in equitable distribution. It does not matter what anyone has done. Fault's not a factor in equitable distribution, and you're not going to get your pound of flesh by going and banging on the judge's bench, asking the judge to consider your emotional concerns.
Well, let me ask this then. Abel, I'll turn to you since Nancy has said I'll switch to you for a second. Because, Nancy, you had just said there's litigation, and maybe litigation in the old days, you had to do that in order to get maybe what you wanted because the example of the Bethlehem Steel pension. So there was litigation probably to bring fairness to the past.
Exactly.
So now, because so much has been decided and there's case law and it's more predictable, you said, what the alternative then is not litigation. So divorce does not always mean litigation. Is that correct, Abel?
Divorce means litigation if you have two people who are emotionally charged and they're not thinking rationally and they want their, as Nancy said, their pound of flesh. Most cases, frankly, can be resolved without going to court, but there's all these external issues that are affecting people, whether it's financial, whether it's emotional, and that clouds their judgment. What I try to tell clients when they come in is we are divorce lawyers, and the divorce court doesn't deal with emotion. You have to go somewhere else, whether it's therapy or to your minister, your priest, deal with it there. No one is going to care that you're upset for the reasons why the marriage broke down. They just want to get to the facts, and it becomes a business decision, and people need to, they have a hard time grasping that it's a business decision, which causes some litigation.
Can I ask something, though, with the, it not being litigation, not having to go to court, so
it's mediated.
You can mediate, and
the idea of the green divorce is that either through, if you want to engage an attorney, and I'm a certified mediator as well, people can either come and they, both people can come and they can mediate. They can sit down, they can go through the assets, and Abel will discuss in a minute some of the concerns that people who go through litigation, the lawyers don't have the time. They're fighting, for a principle, or they're fighting for an old lava lamp that you've never seen for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But, they're fighting over issues. And no one, very often, we've seen many, many people come to our office with property settlement agreements that have been drafted by lawyers, and there are major mistakes in them because they're so caught up in the fight that things are forgotten. In a mediation or in a more conciliatory, collaborative divorce situation, which is really like the concept of a green divorce, the parties can have their own lawyers but that they can come together in a four-way meeting, or they can come together in mediation, just the clients themselves. But I want Abel to explain some of the issues when we're talking about the division of assets, the tax implications that people overlook sometimes in litigation because the court is not concerned about them.
Right.
I mean, the statute says they should be, but there are so many cases.
And I imagine, nothing against attorneys, but just like accountants in every profession, some people have different strengths, but there might be attorneys who are very good divorce attorneys or litigators and may not understand the income tax consequences, which obviously are very important to me, and I love talking about that. So when we come back from our break, we're going to hit Abel up to talk a little bit about the tax implications of division of assets. Folks, if you have questions, give us a call. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a sec.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Hi, this is Rebecca Walls, Development Director here at WDIY. We're gearing up for our spring membership drive, but once again, we're giving you the opportunity to buy back several on-air pledge days. We need to raise $6,500 by next Thursday, and if we do that, we'll push back the start of our pledge drive by 3 days. We're getting close. Please consider giving today. Log on to our website and renew your membership, become a new member, or give an additional gift. It's quick, easy, and safe. Plus, it will give us all more of what we love to hear on WDIY.
Welcome back, everyone. And I have in the studio with me this evening attorneys Nancy Wallach and Abel Iacobelli. We are talking about green divorce and some interesting aspects of that. And it's important sometimes to even understand the aspects of divorce, even if we aren't divorced, if we're thinking about getting married. There's lots of items that maybe people need to pay attention to. We'll probably touch on prenups as we go through this subject as well. If you have questions this evening, we welcome your calls, 610-758-8810. Now, we were just talking about the basic concept of green divorce, and I liked how you explained it, Nancy, that green has so many different meanings to us. Some people think it's about, you know, conserving energy, which I believe if you try to do this amicably, you could save a lot of energy and a lot of emotion. But you also pointed out that it could be green light going forward. Love that. And green financial saving resources, that type of thing. Lots of good feelings around that word green divorce. Now, when we were talking about, before the break, about going through a green divorce, it's in lieu of litigation where people can come together and mediate and try to come up with an amicable solution together. And that's typically around a number of issues like division of assets or child custody or alimony. But first, Abel, let's talk about the division of assets, because it's not always just about, okay, I have $200,000 in the bank. Here's $100,000 for you and $100,000 for me. It could be much more complicated than that. So we have probably different types of assets that we need to talk about. And then more importantly, which I really like to stress, why people need to do this the right way, is the tax consequences of the assets that they're looking to divide. I like to call it the after-tax consequence of property division. Right. So give people a picture of, first let me say the phone number one more time, and then I want you to go into the picture of what we're talking about there, because it's really, really important. Phone number 610-758-8810. Take it away, Abel.
Okay. Well, I think the easiest way to explain it is I have a brief example.
Okay.
So if I have a client comes into my office and they say, my husband and I have assets worth $2.1 million, just to make life easy, and it's comprised of a house that's worth $500,000. We have an investment account of worth $1.5 million, $50,000 in savings bonds, and $50,000 in the bank. Hopefully my math worked out.
Okay.
It's really easy to say we're each going to get $1,050,000. but you have to do it in a fair way. And by that I mean, if one person gets all of the liquid asset and the other person gets an illiquid asset, it's not really a fair concept.
Sorry, can I just say that is even a good point as well. Right. It's not just about the tax consequence. It's about what's liquid and what's not liquid. I like that because some people might get the illiquid and they need the liquid.
Right.
Okay, go ahead. Liquid and illiquid, like that.
So if in my scenario or that I'm proposing, you know, if a client says, I'm going to keep the house, the savings bonds, and I'll take a portion of the investment accounts, you know, that to the layperson seems like a fair deal. But there are hidden consequences that you really should be concerned about and aware of when you make this deal. First, the common general rule is there are no tax consequences in divvying up assets pursuant to a divorce. That is the general rule. However, there are some hidden rules that people generally aren't aware of. Big one is savings bonds, for example. Under the IRS rules, I don't want to get too technical, but under IRS rules, if you have savings bonds that you purchased at $5,000 and are now worth $50,000, and you haven't paid the tax every year on the interest that's earned, and so you've accumulated all that, under the rules, when that asset gets transferred from husband to wife or wife to husband, you're supposed to recognize that income, and it's ordinary income, so there's a tax hit there. Not a lot of people know that. So is it fair to transfer the bonds at that $50,000, or should we tax affect it and figure out what the tax implication is before we distribute it? So that's a key concept. That's just one example of many. The other big one is we have a house and a pension. That's a typical average divorce case. And back a few years ago, not that long ago, before the Enron issue happened, people would trade the house for the pension. And we would present value a pension, even with the steal. And then Enron happened and people lost their pensions. So were those deals fair? You've traded an asset that no longer exists for a house. So now the divorce code says for a pension, we're going to split that up and each of you will assume the risk of it, of the company going out of business, and you'll each get the benefit of cost of living increases, etc. And same thing with a house. We're going to figure out what the equity in the house is, and we're going to split up the house. So there's not as much trading of assets.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to come back to just a couple little points.
Sure.
One of the points you said is there is a general rule about the tax consequences in a divorce when they're splitting assets. Sometimes it's not treated like a sale, so there isn't like a tax consequence if we split the brokerage account and the brokerage account's worth $500,000 and we paid $100,000 for the assets. There's a $400,000 gain. If we split it, no one's recognizing gain on that.
At that point.
Yeah, correct. They just split it and then they do whatever they want with it once it's in their own name. But the savings bonds are a little bit different.
Savings bonds are a lot different, right?
So savings bonds, that's an important point. Savings bonds, because you're actually kind of changing from what could be joint ownership, the IRS says you have to recognize the accrued income that had not been recognized previously. So that's probably one of the only kind of assets I would see where there's could be an income tax consequence on transfer.
Well, on transfer. But going back to the investment account, if you have an investment account that's worth $1.5 million and you divvy up the account where someone's getting the higher basis assets and the other person – cost basis, excuse me – and the other spouse is getting the lower cost basis assets, when they liquidate those shares and liquidate that account, there's going to be a huge difference in the tax implication to each of the parties.
So I don't know if I had said this when we came back from the break or if I had said it on a break about looking at after-tax consequences. So in that example, you would sit with the couple, do an inventory of the assets, but not just an inventory of the value of the assets, but an inventory of the value plus the cost basis of the assets.
And both parties would get the benefit of that if they are not arguing over, I have to have this asset or that asset. If they will keep an open mind and either come, you know, to mediation or have, you know, their lawyers the two lawyers sit down and, you know, with Abel to go through the tax consequences. One thing that I think both Abel and I have seen recently, many young people whose marriages have not lasted maybe 5, 7, 8 years, but who have IRAs, they go on the internet and they get these forms, and they think that they're fine to just fill out the form, and sometimes it's okay. But you cannot transfer an IRA without tax consequences until after the divorce. And I'll ask Abel to pick up on this because he's the tax expert. But if we could just educate people out there that they have to be very, very careful, even if they're represented by counsel, some attorneys are not careful in explaining to their clients that they have to wait for that divorce decree, or you talked about the tax consequence of a transfer. Do you want to explain
that? Well, we'll talk about that when we come back from the from the break. Very interesting information. If you have questions this evening for attorneys Wallach or Iacobelli, we are happy to have your calls. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Back in a sec.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY-FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
And we are back. I have with me in the studio this evening attorneys Nancy Wallach and Abel Iacobelli from the law firm Wallach and Iacobelli. But I will spell Iacobelli. Well, you spell it, Abel.
It's I-A-C-O-B-E-L-L-I.
So kind of how it sounds and how it's spelled is a little bit different. So in case you're Googling it, I wanted you to know that. Real quick, do you have a website? Your website is called
www.wallach.com.
Wallach.com. I thought it was greendivorce.com.
I think
there's
both.
Also.
You
there's
have
also two.
Okay.
Yes.
Greendivorce.com or Wallach.com.
Right.
Okay. I just wanted to get that out. We are discussing a green divorce in the studio this evening, and I think we're making some important points if someone is contemplating divorce or going through a divorce about the importance of being very, very careful about what you're doing when you're talking about equitable distribution. We want it to be equitable, and it's not a matter of just looking at the dollars and saying you get X number of dollars and I get X number of dollars. It's about factoring in that the consequences of that, the monies or property that you're transferring, and also the liquidity of it. If you're someone who's taking the house and there's a mortgage on it and you can't pay the mortgage because you didn't take any of the liquid assets, you need to think that through beforehand to make sure that you're going to be able to maintain the property. We haven't even started talking about other issues along with divorce, about prenups, alimony, and child support. But I think the tax consequences in divorce and property distribution are so important. I want to take just a couple more minutes to talk about that. And then I think we could move into a little bit talking about prenups, because we don't really see them that often. Yeah. And you do, maybe? Okay, I have not been, you know, I have not seen them. But
they haven't been getting divorced yet.
That's right.
Right. But I've been writing them.
The people who've been divorced once before know about them more than the people who've never been divorced,
and
right?
Mine aren't set aside.
Okay, so we'll talk about that in a sec. So any more information you'd like to add on the tax consequences of distributions and making sure you're doing things the right way?
Well, when we were going to break, Nancy was talking about IRAs, and a lot of the plan administrators that run the IRAs and administer the IRAs, they won't allow you to do it until the divorce is entered, and they have very specific guidelines, and they want a copy, certified copy of the decree and letters of instruction. But if you do it before that, it is going to be taxable income. It's almost like a withdrawal,
right? To the distribution,
right? And there's, you know, as you know, penalties and withholding taxes, mm-hmm. and there's all kinds of really bad things that can happen. So you got to be very, very, very careful on retirement accounts.
Can I add, too, for people who are listening, when I have seen people go through a divorce and they have a quadro, mm-hmm. a qualified domestic relations order comes in with retirement accounts, 401ks, and things like this.
Right.
Sometimes you see the, what do you call the spouse who's not the employee?
Is there alternate payee. Participant.
Okay, the alternate participant or payee. The alternate participant or payee. Sometimes you'll see them now, maybe they're on their own. Maybe they weren't the investment kind of manager in the family. Maybe it was the spouse. And all of a sudden they have this account. They go to a financial advisor and they say, oh, let's roll it over to an IRA. And the person thinks, oh, okay, I'll roll it over to an IRA. And maybe the woman's 40 years old. Now she has this rollover IRA. She goes to tap it because she needs money to pay the mortgage. And all of a sudden, she can't take money out of that IRA because of the income tax consequences and a 10% penalty on early withdrawal. And what a lot of people are not aware of, which I'm sure good divorce attorneys would counsel their clients, that if you are someone who's under age 59 and a half and you are an alternate payee, you can, under a quadro, take distributions out of the 401k. While they are still income taxable, they are not subject to the 10% penalty. So please, please refrain. So we've already learned a couple things tonight, right, Nancy and Abel? We've learned that don't transfer IRAs before you're divorced. You have to have the divorce before you can transfer the IRA. Otherwise, it's considered a distribution. And once you're divorced, if you have a quadro, make sure that you don't roll it over to an IRA if you're under age 59 and a half, because you could be subject to the 10% penalty. Any other comments about the taxes? And
well, there's, I don't know if we're going to get to it later in the show, but there's a lot of tax implications regarding alimony. And how alimony affects child support.
Okay.
So that's, if you want to, you want me to get into it now, or do you want to?
Well, I want to add one more comment about the equitable distribution of assets. It's sometimes not always just the assets that are apparent. I had a client come in, and part of their agreement was he was going to retain a life insurance policy mm-hmm. for the wife as the beneficiary. And what he had not factored in, he was going to make all these payments for the life insurance. And I said to him, you know, when you're looking at equitable distribution and you're talking about dividing the assets evenly, have you factored in the present value of those payments on that life insurance? Because you're in essence giving her more, and then she'd end up with that big life insurance policy.
Right.
So, you know, I like people to think about beyond just the assets as well.
Right.
So, by the way, we had a call come in, and if you do have questions, you could call in at 610-758-8810. This is off air, and it's from Mary, and she asked about investment accounts. She said she has no financial records of the husband. The file is missing from the cabinet.
What a shock.
How could she find out more about it? They are divorcing. Okay. Do you have any advice for Mary?
Well, I think this is a very simple resolution for Mary. It's called discovery. Once a divorce is filed, you have the right to ask the other party for financial records, and they are obligated to disclose them and to provide them. You can do that directly through your lawyer. If the husband is being obdurate or thinks he is not going to have to disclose them, you go to court, and then he gets sanctions, and you get attorney's fees. And then ultimately, and this has happened in my 30 years, they still refuse, you can put your best estimate as to, and you have to do it with a forensic accountant, as to what it is, and he can't object to the amount. So if he's playing around with $100,000, he's not disclosing it, you have certain tax returns that show Schedule B income, you have, a Schedule E, you have other, tax return information or documentation, that you can acquire based upon subpoenas. You can back it out. The one thing that I think your caller should bear in mind, and this, Abel and I have also had this issue, when people come to us and with property settlement agreements that they're trying to set aside, you have to have full and fair disclosure in this state for a property settlement agreement to be enforceable. The whole idea of dividing assets and writing it down on a piece of paper is so that you're going to be bound by it. If there is not full and fair disclosure, the court can set it aside. So if the husband is playing games, or if a wife is playing games and not disclosing assets, there are a multitude of ways that you can approach that.
And that could also drag it out and have more cost as well, because then you're going back and forth.
Well, and what I said in the beginning, I mean, those games, it's over. You know, it's over. There are many, many ways now we can find assets that we didn't have 30 years
right,
ago.
Right.
And, you know, you had to subpoena. It was very, very expensive. It was very, very cost, very costly. But the discovery is the way you get the, you can't get it back in the filing cabinet, but you certainly can get the information.
Right. The other thing you should, and piggybacks off of what Nancy said, if you send out your discovery request and you get information back, I always like to cross-reference what has been provided with a tax return. I mean,
right.
It's not 100%. But if you look at the tax return and you see, just by way of example, Wells Fargo interest or dividend income, and you don't see any Wells Fargo statements coming in.
$12,000 and there's no statement?
Right. It raises red flags, first thing. Second thing is the divorce code has a provision for undisclosed assets. And what can happen if they're undisclosed assets? They're held in what's called a constructive trust. You can go to court and have a trustee appointed. So there are severe ramifications for not disclosing assets.
Folks, if you have questions this evening, you can call in at 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. I want to make a point about tax returns. Sometimes people prepare their own tax returns, and those tax returns could go missing as well. If you do have a paid preparer, the paid preparer is required to keep those tax returns on file for years and years and years and years and years. So sometimes in discovery, if you can't get your hands on something currently, you might even be able to get your hands on maybe, you know, prior year or two and trace it from that direction. And also, you can go to the IRS and maybe ask for transcripts of the records. Isn't this fun? It's also interesting.
Now, well, I used to read a lot of Nancy Drew when I was little. So.
Ah, yes. Well, hence the interest in all of this, like critical care. That's right. That's right. Problem solving, I like to say too. Okay. We've talked a little bit about about property distribution, about trying to do it in a fair and equitable way to save money. Both parties come with full disclosure. It's just going to make it a lot easier in the end. So that would be the ultimate goal. Sometimes it's not about property distribution. Maybe people don't have property, and it's about one spouse making $300,000 while the other spouse stayed home. So that they could go to school, get their PhD or whatever, and have this great job. Kind of back to the Bethlehem Steel issue. You know, someone's holding down the fort and kind of taking care of things. What do we do about alimony?
Well, first thing people need to understand is it's not a guarantee that you get alimony in Pennsylvania.
Because we don't see it that often. I think I have one client with alimony. Not kidding.
You may have more cases than you think.
because they don't
realize that they have to declare alimony as income on their tax return.
It depends on the agreement, though, doesn't it?
Well,
can you agree not to do it?
Yes, you
Yes,
can
but
agree.
Then it's not really an alimony award. It's an equitable distribution payment.
Award. Oh,
so if you
okay.
phrase your property settlement agreement that it's an equitable distribution payment, and you don't have the magic language that the IRS code requires you to have to make it alimony, then it is not taxable. But if you do have that magic language, it is taxable income to the recipient and above the line deduction to the payor. And the kicker is that in terms of child support, if you are the recipient spouse getting the alimony award, it is considered or could be considered income to you, thereby decreasing your child support payment. So it's not always the best idea to ask for and demand an alimony payment because you may be hurting yourself. You may be better off with a higher distribution of assets.
Okay, we have a caller on line one. Jeff, we're going to slow down the break. We're going to take the call. And we have Veronica on the line. Veronica, can you hear me? Veronica? Hello? Okay. Well, Veronica, we're going to take a quick break. If you're on the phone, we hope you just hang on a little bit. If we've missed you, just call us right back. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services, including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Okay, we are back. Veronica, do we have you on the line? Hello? Okay. Veronica, are you there? Hi. I think we're still trying to get Veronica. I apologize. I have in the studio with me this evening attorneys Nancy Wallach and Abel Iacobelli from Wallach and Iacobelli, online at wallach.com or greendivorce.com. And we're discussing a green divorce, trying to do things in an efficient, equitable, fair way. And if you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We are trying to get Veronica on the line, and I apologize for the confusion, Veronica. We're having just a little bit of technical difficulty, so we will try to get her when we can. When we're talking about alimony, we were saying that sometimes when it's put into an agreement as alimony, then the alimony, the receiver, is paying income tax on it. And then they might have some tax benefits as far as like contributing to an IRA based on the alimony received and different things like that. And the person who's paying the alimony actually gets a deduction on page one, reduces their income. Sometimes can alimony be set like to be an even amount the same every year or adjusted depending on the person's income, you know, because let's say you get divorced when one person's making $300,000 and the other one's making nothing. But then maybe 2 years later, the person loses their job and now they're making $50,000. So how do attorneys address alimony issues in that case?
Well, you make an alimony award modifiable, which means the monthly amount of alimony can change.
Okay.
If you're going to do it by agreement, you'll want to set some parameters on when that modification can happen.
Okay, that's great. All right, now I think we do have Veronica. Veronica, can you hear me?
All right.
Yay! Thank you for hanging on with us.
Welcome.
Oh, sure.
Okay, go ahead. What's your question?
Okay, my question is, I'm going through a divorce, and I'm the one that filed, basically on suspicion of adultery. And we have a significant amount of circumstantial evidence. He refuses to provide any of his credit cards for the past 3 years, and his lawyer waived that, and my lawyer waived my ability to provide when I was willing to provide. Number one, I think that should be something that should be looked at, because how can they state what he's, you know, paying for every single month, and there could be things on his credit cards that he wants to hide that I think should be brought into light. And number two, will marital misconduct help me in reducing my alimony payments?
Well, regrettably, Veronica, you're really asking for a legal opinion, and really we cannot give a legal opinion. I wish we could help you, but ethically we can't. You have an attorney that you need to discuss this with. And we can answer the second question. Fault is not a factor in equitable distribution, but it is one of 17 factors in post-divorce alimony. And marital misconduct is a factor in post-divorce alimony. So to the extent that you have information or belief, you can bring that to your attorney, and if you can't resolve the case amicably, then you bring it to the master, depending upon what county you're on. Neither county really has many, quote, full hearings on these issues. They try to resolve it by discussing with you alternate ways of approaching this, but your fault is a factor.
Let me just chime in for 1 second and say, you really need to do in your own head a cost-benefit analysis of what it's going to cost you to get 3 years worth of credit card statements to prove something that may not matter to a divorce master or in your divorce case. And I would urge you to think about that before you spend the money going down that road.
Okay.
Does that help, Veronica?
Yes, it does. I'm just hoping that the what we do have is going to help me, you know, reduce the amount or the time that I'm going to have to pay. That's all I'm hoping for.
Yeah. Well, good luck with everything.
Okay, thank you very much for calling.
Take care. Have a good night. Folks, if you have questions, we do have some time left. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Obviously, the attorneys cannot give legal advice, so it's general guidance that we're giving this evening because we also do not have all the facts and circumstances of any, you know, case or, you know, story that people tell. We like to help. We like to educate. And sometimes, too, you have to trust your instincts around certain things. And I think that Abel brought up a great point that you have to kind of do this cost-benefit analysis in your head. And back to Nancy's point at the beginning, which kind of goes into this green divorce, there are some matters that it doesn't matter whose fault it is. So that lies more in the property distribution, I think, is what you were saying, as far as like if someone did something wrong or not, it might not matter.
It does not matter at all in property distribution. It's only one factor in equitable distribution. And I have tried cases, and I know Abel has, where there's blatant adultery. And if the need is not met for post-divorce alimony, if the other factors are not met, then that does not automatically mean that you're going to get an award of post-divorce alimony. And I just wanted to piggyback on what Abel said a few minutes ago, that there's a misconception that, you know, Pennsylvania is an alimony state. Pennsylvania revised its alimony provision in the divorce code to say that this is a needs-based analysis. And locally, I'd like Abel to explain what the myth is and why we would like to explain to people that it is a myth. There is no one-for-three calculation.
Well, okay. You just explained
it. No, but you're going to tell them what it means.
General rule that our divorce masters, who are really the people that make the decision if you can't, is that they follow this myth that it's 1 year of alimony for every 3 years of marriage. You know, some say capped at 5 to 7 years unless you're close to retirement, and they fudge it a little bit. And going back to what Nancy said, that the code absolutely says it's supposed to be a needs-based analysis. I will tell you, this is one of those points of contention in litigation where if you're the payor spouse and you say, I want to have my spouse prove the need for alimony, you're going to get a lot of strange looks from the divorce masters because they really have no interest in sitting through a day's worth of testimony on whether there's a need for alimony or not. And they don't bother doing the needs analysis, and they just kind of plug in the formula that you use when people are going through a divorce, which they do it. That's not technically the way they're supposed to do it. And that's one of the frustrations that we and other divorce lawyers have on that issue of alimony.
Can I get this straight? I just want to make sure I understood what you said. It's supposed to be needs-based.
Right. For post-divorce alimony.
For post-divorce alimony.
Not interim support. Interim support is based upon the child support guidelines in Pennsylvania. It's spousal support or alimony pendente lite is based on a straight formula from the child support guidelines. Post-divorce alimony is not.
It's supposed to be needs-based, but you just said they really don't care if you need it or
they
not.
Don't. They don't.
Okay, so I wasn't confused. Let me back up. That's why you're frustrated.
I've had a number, and I know Nancy has as well, a number of very large asset cases. And the masters are of the opinion, well, if your client is getting several million dollars, they don't need alimony. And I've made the argument, but spouse A is making $500,000, spouse B is making $30,000, there's still a need for alimony.
To my point about making sure you can pay your bills for the utilities and the real estate taxes and the mortgage.
Right, exactly.
Because the argument in that situation is the standard of living in between the parties during the course of their marriage was such that they went to Barbados, they went to Paris, they stayed at hotels in New York. But the standard of living, and people come in all the time, well, what about our standard of living? And the masters really don't give the standard of living really any consideration. Mm-hmm. That's why, as I said in the beginning of the program, after 30 years of real frustration, I will admit that the 80s and 90s were exciting. They were exciting because the judges, you know, the cases, precedent had not been set. And I was in Superior Court so many times. I mean, it was sort of fun to make law. And sometimes not so much fun because the judges would look at you and say that you don't know what the law is and go back to law school. When I tried to stop a woman from relocating to Northampton County to California because she had met somebody and wanted to take the children, I went to court to try to prevent it. And the judge in 1985 told me that there was no such thing and I should go back to law school, that I didn't understand the Commerce Clause, I don't know what that meant. But in any event, now it's the law. Now you have to file a request for relocation to move out of the state of Pennsylvania.
Yeah. I am woman, I am here. Yeah, exactly. Get used to it. That's good. I'm glad things have changed. You mentioned children. We only have a few minutes. Can we give some quick advice about child support or custody at this point?
Let me
in 2 minutes?
A minute on custody.
Okay.
Do yourself a favor and work it out amongst yourselves if you
Amen.
Can. Because if you can't, you will spend a tremendous amount of money litigating your case in front of judges who, frankly, would rather go golfing. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to be disrespectful, but they really do not want to hear.
Because they're tough cases,
well,
I imagine.
They don't ever go away.
They're heart-wrenching.
You know, a murder case, they sentence this person, they go to jail, you don't see them again. Custody cases tend to come back, and they have to see the kids grow up. Mm-hmm. And the constant arguing, and they just don't want to deal with it. And they put obstacle after obstacle before you can even get to a trial.
The other thing is that all the research that's been done with respect to divorce litigation in particular is that years ago we thought that it was the divorce itself that caused the children from acting out. We thought boys acted out more than girls. All the recent research that's been done is that boys act out differently. Girls are acting out the same, but they act out inwardly. Boys act out with anger. They hit people at school. And what the researchers all say, and I think it's Joanne Kelly, you can read her online, and you can go to the websites for the U.S. government, for the child services, that it's the conflict between the parties
that
devastates these children. And when they fight and fight and fight, really, the legacy that they're giving their children is really not the role model that I think in their heart of hearts they want. But at the same time, the parents, you have to understand, are in pain.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very hard when you've got somebody who's in excruciating pain to try to explain to them that what they're doing to their children is really not what they want for their children. It's not best.
Mm-hmm. I met a divorced couple once, and they were like best friends with their ex-spouses, and they all would go out to dinner together. And
that's great.
And there was another couple at my children's school, and I'd see them in church every Sunday. We'd go to soccer games, and we were new to the school, and I just assumed they were married. And she said, "Do you know we're divorced?" I'm like, "What? No, they held hands in church. They sat together at the soccer games. They'd been divorced for years, but the children, no one ever knew it because they were all so close." And, you know, when we talk about doing things with a green divorce, it's also about green light, moving forward. You know, why have all that negative energy in the environment? Let's try to do things the positive way, and it's better financially. How do people reach you, Nancy? You can tell me a phone number, and I'll have Abel tell me the website.
It's 610-434-5441, and I want to thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to come and try to explain to people this new concept. It's really going to require a whole paradigm shift and a mind shift, you know, but we're here. We'd like to. We're not going to give up on giving the message out.
Can you say the phone number one more time?
610-434-5441.
And the website, Abel?
It's www.wallach.com or thegreendivorce.com. Greendivorce.com.
Greendivorce.com is easier to spell than Wallach because there's an S in Wallach.
S-C-H.
Yes, I know. So I was writing it first without the S.
And they're both easier to spell than Yuccabelli. So
that's right.
Greendivorce.com.
That's right. We have to come up with a quick phrase for you guys. Green Divorce sounds good. I thank you so much for being here.
For
it's interesting. And I know that there was lots more that we didn't cover and didn't have time to cover, but it goes very fast. So you're welcome to come back on another time and maybe we could just talk on one piece of this instead of everything.
Thanks again.
So I appreciate the introduction. Folks, next week I'm going to be done with tax season, thank God. And if I decide to come into the studio, I've decided what I'm going to talk about is just the aftermath of tax season and talk about some of my favorite things around financial planning, and that being probably mostly estate planning. So we will be back here next week. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Neil, for being here. Stay tuned for Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. And remember, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.